Fakeologist Radio Conference Call, another fakeologist service to connect like-minded skeptics who want to share their ideas with like-minded individuals. Unlike audio chat, all you need is a telephone, whether it be a hard line or a soft line like Skype. Go to fakeologist.com/CC and learn how to participate or start a call. And hear it later on fakeologist.com. To comment on this call, find the post at audiochat.fakeologist.com and scroll through the archives. Now, on with the call.
It's the Drive Home with John Adams and Fakeologist on Friday, August 7th, 2015. I'll be your host, Fakeologist, and John Adams will be the guest. John, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you. How are you?
I'm great. I'm here on the sunny shores of Lake Ontario on the north side, on the British side of the lake. I guess you're on the British side too, but you just don't call it that.
Yeah, there's lots of British names all around this particular area of California. In fact, there's a city just south of here. It's called Westminster.
Now, there you go.
Doesn't get more British than that.
No. I'm just looking up at the sky here in Toronto, and there's not a chemtrail in sight, just for anyone who wanted to get the chemtrail report from here. What's the chemtrail report there?
Yesterday, we had heavy chemtrails all over the place, and today we have clear skies, so, yeah.
Oh, so they give you a break, whatever that is. Whatever that means.
Yeah, they do. Occasionally, I think chemtrails are more weather related than anything else. So that's my viewpoint on it. So I think what they do is when they spray, there'll be a couple of days where it's clear, but then you'll see actual natural clouds start to form, and then spraying occurs and gets rid of those natural clouds. It's kind of bizarre, but.
Would the purpose be to make rain? Is there still a very bad drought situation there?
Yeah, we've actually had some heavy rains pretty recently. And, in fact, yesterday we got like a downpour that lasted about 10 minutes, and then it just all went away and it didn't rain anymore. So.
Yeah.
The thing with that type of stuff is, like, that's not uncommon to have a summer rain occasionally in California, but it's been so dry. I tend to think that the chemtrails do the opposite, that they actually keep moisture out of the air.
Yeah.
Well, especially if you believe, which I do, what they're spraying into the air is aluminum oxide. If you know how to use aluminum oxide in industrial setting, it's to the purpose for aluminum oxide is to get rid of moisture. So if that's what they are spraying, that makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, none of it makes sense to me, as I've made myself clear. It makes no sense to me. To me, it's like pissing in a swimming pool. I don't see how man can be that effective against Mother Nature. She's just a little too much bigger than man could ever want to be.
Yeah, I am skeptical on the varying degree as to what could be done, but I definitely think in areas that you could probably control a centralized weather pattern. Let me correct that.
Pissing in the ocean would be a better analogy. I don't think anyone would notice. Not one fish would notice.
Well, I would politely disagree with you, only because I would think if you put up a jetty on a beach, that a fish would notice that the current would be altered by a jetty. So it could be possible. It's possible that you could control the weather in a particular small area, and then which would make a lot of sense, because then they would. That's why you would have all this. Planes with the trails going all over the place in different areas of the world.
Yeah.
But who knows?
I don't like to use the word control. control implies that they have a system and they dominate the system. That's what control means to me. How about influence or modify?
Weather modification. That's actually what it's, when you read the literature from the 60s where,
yeah,
they're talking about, that's what they're calling it. They're calling it weather modification. So, yeah, that would be more accurate than weather control. Yeah.
Okay, well, that's good. Now, did that audio get up that you did with that individual? I forget what his name was.
Yes, it did, his name was Adam Parfrey, and Chris posted that either last night or this morning, I'm not sure, but it is up there, and we also did a call the next day with Jay Dyer.
Okay.
And we thanked you and Fakeologist.com on the Jay Dyer call for the help with the previous day's interview.
Oh, that's fine. That's good. I wasn't looking for that. I just wanted to make sure Chris got it because I didn't get a – well, no, he did reply and said he got it, actually. Okay, that's really good. Now I'm just looking on my fake Hoaxbusters feed. And by the way, there is a feed for HoaxbustersCall.com. I'm not sure if the feed – gatherers can find it automatically. I'm not sure also if Chris has posted it manually, but Chris emailed me the feed for the site, and I did plug it in, and it does work. And I wanted to recommend that people subscribe to the feed from the website and not from the feed from TalkShoe, because at least the feed from the website has the audio and all the notes to the audio, where the TalkShoe feed just has the audio with no link to any posts.
I've never linked to TalkShoe myself, so I don't know. I just have I have my iTunes link, and then I have the audio feed from the website, and then I just make the daily rounds. I've got my daily rounds of places I visit, and when I'm surfing the internet highway.
Chris puts a lot of notes in the website, hoaxbusterscall.com, and that's what he talks about. He must write them down as he's going, because otherwise I don't know how he can remember all that huge notes.
I think that's what he does, yeah.
Yeah, it's a good idea. I'm usually driving a lot, so I can't write it down, and I don't re-listen to my podcast most of the time. I certainly don't go all the way through, but if anyone wants to make notes on mine, whoever listens, feel free, and I'll post them as keywords for anyone who's searching for these types of discussions. And, of course, words have a better chance of being found by the search engines than audio. I don't think the technology is there to listen to audio and switch it into keywords at this point, but maybe it is. So what did you and Jay Dyer talk about, if you could sum it up? I see all the keywords. They look like the normal keywords, so how did the conversation go with Jay Dyer? Who's a very interesting person.
Yeah, it went well. I was on there for about a little bit over an hour, and then him and Chris dipped their toe into the 5 minute or the 5 hour mark, I think, almost getting.
Wow. Are you kidding me? Wow.
No. Yeah. So it's almost.
They must
like
each other.
Yeah. Jay's made it clear that he doesn't mind doing marathon calls. So
that's fantastic. It must be a real meeting of the minds then.
Yeah, I haven't listened to it all the way through, but it's definitely a good call, and it's full of lots of talk about fakery. So you'll definitely like it, and the fakeologist audience will definitely like it. So
I'm glad you said that, because really that is still my interest. I wonder what Jay's take is on my other interest, of course, which is the baller skepticism. Do they get into any of that? Because can't deny that that's flooding the internet. Ball earth skepticism.
I don't know. I've never asked him about that. But if we have him on again next month, then maybe I'll bring it up to him, see what he says.
I'd also like to hear, someone sent me an email requesting information on what fakeologists or culture creation specialists like yourself know about Miles Mathis, MM33, and what your take on of him is, whether he's real, whether he's put there to be the 99th percentile issuance from the intelligence communities to keep us busy. I'm not familiar.
I know one thing that has hindered me from going and looking at his stuff in the past was that it was all based around PDFs, and I didn't have internet access, so I could never look at a PDF with my not so smart phone.
Oh yeah.
And so I wasn't able to look at a lot of his stuff. I recently just watched a video, though, that Chris had posted up there, and it was about the Manson murders, and they were doing a lot of referencing to Miles Mathis. And the other thing I know about him is that he doesn't like Dave McGowan. And
I wonder if Dave McGowan's okay. He's in the hospital.
Yeah, I got an email from him about a month ago, and he says he's not really doing too well still, but he's still alive.
All right.
I had noticed that Dave McGowan had posted something on his Facebook page, which that's the only Facebook page I've ever been to, is the Dave McGowan Facebook page. But he was saying that Miles Mathis was putting out stuff saying that that Dave McGowan was a limited hangout type of guy. And
how's he limited?
What are
his limits? What are Dave McGowan's limits? I'd like an explanation of that accusation.
Well, he was just saying that, so Dave McGowan was rebutting him on his Facebook page. And I think the conclusions that Dave has come to, at least the ones that I've seen, are pretty reasonable, and I know people ask him questions all the time about whether he thinks things are fake, and he says he tells them, well, at this point I don't know what is fake and what isn't, you know. So
oh, okay, he doesn't make commentary on fakery too much then. Okay,
well, he says that there's, I mean, this what he's told me and what he told us on our afternoon commute interview was that the stuff that he has investigated and found out to be fake, he thinks is fake. So,
all right.
As far as the stuff that Miles Mathis, it was interesting because, like I said, I was watching this video that Chris posted about the Manson murders, and they were referencing a lot of things about Miles Mathis's research. But a lot of it was stuff that I had already heard from Dave McGowan. So I was thinking to myself, okay, where do we get to the actual research that this guy does? And basically what it seemed like he was doing, I'm not saying this is what he's doing because I don't know him personally and I'm not familiar with his other pieces of work, but he basically took a lot of the information that I had already read from Dave McGowan, and then he just said, okay, all of these things are fake.
Yeah.
So he connected it that way, which Chris and I have already done, and which, you know, people at Fakeologist have already done too. It's just like that's what you do. And so it wasn't anything really revelatory where I was like, oh my gosh, this is so mind blowing that this guy is saying this, that the Manson murders were fake. I already came to that conclusion on my own. So,
yeah.
So, okay. But yeah, it still is interesting. It still is other stuff. I probably should look into some of the other stuff that he talks about. But the other thing that I'm always leery of, I'm not saying this absolutely about him because, like I said, I've only heard that one piece heard that one piece of information about the Manson murders. But you just got to be wary of someone trying to be a cult leader type, you know. And
like who? Miles Mathis is trying to be a cult leader?
I'm not implying that. I'm just saying that's one of the things I always look for. I always look for, okay, is this person's research leading people down a certain rabbit trail?
Okay.
Is it leading them down a rabbit trail? Is this information relevant? Is it something that somebody should be you know, these are just things I run through my mind. I'm not saying that about him. Like I said, I haven't looked that much into him, so I'm not trying to slander
him. Well, if you do look further into his work, I'd certainly welcome your commentary and analysis, and Jay's too. You guys are some of the brightest minds, so everyone wants to hear your opinion on everything, of course. So
yeah,
maybe you guys could go into that. You're a good reader. You like to read, and that's all he has is written stuff. I haven't heard any of his interviews, if he's ever done one.
Yeah, I've never heard an interview with him, and I actually have looked for interviews with him because, like I said, people have forwarded me his material before, and
yeah.
I've actually looked for interviews, but not found a single one.
All right, well, that'll be good. Chris, also, I'm just looking through the notes here, wealth of information in your last afternoon commute with Jay Dyer. You talked about the moon laser. Was that when you were on the call?
That kind of got, when you listen to the call, I read a quote from a book called there's this book from the 1950s. It's a sociological study. It's called The Organization Man. And I also brought this book up to Adam Parfrey when I was interviewing him the other day. And when you hear the call, you'll hear what it's about. But yeah, that kind of stemmed off. Chris talked about his call to the professor Thomas Murphy about moon lasers reflecting off of the lunar surface and whether or not there's reflectors up there that were put up there by the Apollo spacecraft. And,
right.
If anybody hasn't heard that yet, that is that's a pretty hilarious conversation.
I did listen to that, and it seemed to go around in circles. The Thomas Murphy's an expert at deflection. That was the only deflection that I think was real in the whole story of moon deflectors. It's him
being a master
of deflecting the truth.
Yeah, I saw you write. I saw you write that. You know, you always write. I must hand it to you. You always write little witty things on your little blog. So you do a good job. Actually, that was the first time we ever talked to each other on email was when you put food removal machine. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was hilarious. If anybody is a fan of the band, the rock band, The Cult, you would get that.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't even remember what that call was about, but yeah, I remember the words. I don't know who said them or how it came about anymore. Yeah, I use witty headings just to avoid writing long explanations in the post. And as a clue to the listenership here, usually I remove a phrase that I hear from the audios and put it in the title. So you're going to have to listen to the whole audio to find it if you're that interested. Because every now and then, of all the audios I listen to, there's always one or two lines that just I have to stop the audio and write it down. It's just so good from any many different audios, even the No Agenda show. Sometimes they play something that just is so ridiculous, just strikes me in a certain way. And if I don't write it down right away, the feeling will be gone at the end of the audio. I'll completely forget about it. It'll be lost forever.
Yeah, those guys crack me up. I love No Agenda show, although I don't love their conclusions about a lot of things. I have to say I crack up many times during their conversations.
Up to a watt of power. But if you have it away from you, with Bluetooth, it would be microwatts, I think. Could be wrong.
I just plug headphones in.
Yeah, that's good, too.
Yeah. The thing with the cell phones is, I mean, I'm not kidding. You hold a cell phone up to your ear for a while, you'll actually start to feel it get hot.
Well, cell phones are hot. The battery is hot. When a battery has current running through it, it gets hot.
Yeah, it's not good, I'm sure.
And there's a processor in smartphones. Processors get hot. In a desktop, they have dedicated fans. Some of them are water cooled. The guy was telling me the other day, he built one at a
water cooler in it, like an ether cooler in a turbo in a car. It gets very, very hot. It's micro circuits all jammed into the super tiny area. That's a miracle of microprocessors.
Yeah, now your audio is fading in and out.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Okay. It's because the wind blowing in my ear.
Okay. I'm outside right now. How's that? 2-2-1-2?
There, that's better.
Yeah.
There, I closed the window all the way. It's hot out today here on the north shore of the Lake Ontario. Talking with John Adams, of course.
John, just to let you know, we can still try and meet up through email, but I'm using a service called meettomeet.com, and if you want to make use of that, I sent you a link to it. Might be an interesting way for us to find like time blocks. You could just check off when you're available, and I'll check off when I'm available. I'm using it for the audio chat. It's actually working out pretty well.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's just a little piece of technology I thought I'd make you aware of if you're interested in using it.
Yes,
of course you need it.
I see the email right now, yeah.
Yeah, I like technology, and it's really helped bring up the listenership on the audio chats. Actually, I have an audio chat. I just put I was available from 5 till 7 today, and looks like a bunch of other people are available as well.
Oh, that's cool.
So yeah. Okay. What else? What did you glean from your other interview with the other interview you did this week? What was your conclusion on that one? Just go over it for me.
I just wanted to see what Mr. Parfrey had to say about his book, Ritual America, Secret Brotherhoods, and Their Influence on American Society. And, it was interesting. I actually was interested in why he wanted to write a book like that, and it's a really excellent book. It's got some really great graphics in it, some stuff I'd never seen before. There's even some stories in there I'd never seen before. There's a lot of stuff about actors being Freemasons,
right,
about Freemasonic movies, about Freemasonic television shows. And so it goes over a lot of things that have to do with what you think of as part of your culture and how those were all influenced by Freemasonry and other other secret societies. Another interesting thing that I knew about, but it was kind of backed up by this book, is that the life insurance business comes out of Freemasonry. And so
can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, it's real interesting because
I have a lot of life insurance. Very expensive.
So if you go to a cemetery, you will see a lot of you might even see a Freemasonic area in any given cemetery where all Masons are buried in the same area. And every cemetery that I've been to, I've actually seen this, where there's a designated area for Masons, and there'll be Masons buried all over the cemetery. They'll have little Masonic gravestones, but there actually is a Masonic burial site at most cemeteries. And then I was reading a book. There was a book written in the 60s called The American Way of Death, and it was talking about how big of a scam cemeteries are. And I started picking up on this, too, about how the healthcare industry and the hospice industry is run by, quote-unquote, charitable organizations. So you have what's called the Shriners Hospital, which is run by the Shriners, and you'll find a lot of other hospitals and hospice, death care organizations are run by the Knights of Columbus or just straight up run by Freemasonic offshoot organizations. So it's the same thing with the cemetery business. And what they do is when you purchase a plot in your and this isn't in the stuff I'm telling you right now is not in Mr. Parfrey's book, but I'll tell you when the information is that's in his book. But when you purchase a plot or a family plot, you purchase it through like a life insurance company that's owned by it's not owned by the cemetery, but it's in cahoots with the cemetery. And you'll notice that the names are kind of funny, especially if you go back in previous time periods. Like, for instance, I remember there was a life insurance company associated with one of the cemeteries out here, and it was called Mayflower Life Insurance. So what you do is you have a little life insurance policy that pays for your burial. Like, you can pre-purchase, you know, your burial ahead of time.
And
it gets paid for through a life insurance policy. I'm not exactly sure what the particulars of that and how that works, but that's how they do it. In any case, that's what really started a very long time ago with Freemasonic guilds is the Freemasons started these life insurance companies, and they started out of the idea that if there wasn't anybody there to kind of help you get buried, then the Freemasons would pay for your burial or at least get you, you know, a plot to be buried in. And this started when towns were a lot smaller and that type of stuff. And so it moved on into the life insurance realm where, okay, well, if you just pay for this life insurance throughout your lifetime, then you'll have enough money saved up so that you'll be able to pay for a burial.
So the Masons were filling a business need and were offering basically, they called it life insurance, but it was really a prepaid monthly death disposal burial type business.
That's correct. Yeah, that's exactly right. And so when I was reading this book, I was thinking to myself, I'm like, you know, that's kind of funny because there's always Freemasonic references in a lot of the life insurance companies. You're in good hands with Allstate.
Right. The good hands people.
That's right. You're in glad hands is more like it. But So there's all that. And then in my quest for some of this information, I came upon an issue of the Scottish Rite Journal, which is the magazine for Scottish Rite of Freemasonry. And they were honoring the founder of State Farm Insurance. And there was this picture up there as being a Scottish Rite Freemason, the guy who founded State Farm Insurance. And he was pretty open about the fact that he was a Freemason and that he believed in conducting business in a Freemasonic manner. I don't know what that exactly means, but I can only guess.
The main matter would be just do business with other Freemasons. I would say that's probably the number one rule of Freemasonic business practices.
Right, and that's a good. I'm glad you brought that up because if you were to type into a search engine, you know, Freemasonry and life insurance, there's all sorts of links everywhere talking about how like in the headings of the links it'll say learn how to get a discount on your insurance through a Freemasonic affiliation or, you know, membership. Freemasonic membership provides life insurance discount.
Wow.
So I thought that was yeah, it was pretty interesting. So I gleaned a lot of stuff out of that book, and I was real glad I found that book. And so people can go check that interview out.
I guess the main question is, do most Americans, are they aware of how pervasive and persistent and how historical Freemasonry is in the genesis of the United States and maybe even in the UK? Are they aware of of the power structure. And I would say I never heard of it before until the first guy that ever asked me, the first question that ever asked when I went on the audio was from Marcus Allen, and he said, "Are you a Freemason?" And I wasn't even sure if that was an insult. I didn't even understand the question because I just had not been aware.
Right.
To me, that would be akin to saying, "Are you a water buffalo?" Which, of course, was the fictitious organization in the Flintstones, which I am a disciple of.
Yes, the
or at least Royal, they used to be.
The Royal Order of Water Buffalo.
Right, with a horn.
Yes. And that's in that book, too. That book goes over a lot of the television shows that have their Freemason episode. The one he didn't mention in the book that always sticks out in my mind is the Andy Griffith episode.
What was his name in the Flintstones? Andy Griffrocks or what?
What's that?
What was Andy Griffith's name in the Flintstones? You know how they always alter the name to fit something to do with rocks?
Yeah, that's right. They do that, yeah. Yeah, there was an Andy Griffith episode where they have their secret society, and I can't remember what they were called. There is an episode of Andy Griffith as well. And so, like, every television show from that time period has some strange thing. The one that stuck out in my mind after that was an afterthought was there was this movie from the 1980s, and it was put out by the director Francis Ford Coppola. And it's a pretty cheesy movie, but stars Kathleen Turner. It's called Peggy Sue Got Married.
Yeah, I've heard of it. I never saw it.
Yeah, and it's a movie about this lady. Kathleen Turner plays this lady who is going to her high school, her, like, 25th high school reunion, and she faints there. And when she faints there, she hits her head, and she goes into a dream world where she goes back to the 1950s. And when she goes back into this dream world of being back in the 1950s and goes back to high school, but she still has the same mentality of 1980s person, kind of like Back to the Future. But the only way she's able to get home is her grandparents help her get home, and her grandfather is a Freemason, and he takes her to his lodge, and they do a ritual, and the ritual that they do gets her back to the future. So instead of using a DeLorean to get back to the future, she goes to the Freemason's lodge and gets willed back into the future through a Freemasonic ritual. It's a pretty bizarre thing, but that was an afterthought. After I learned about Freemasons, I was like, oh, yeah, there's the scene in Peggy Sue Got Married. So,
well, that's cool. Interesting.
Yeah, and it was the same thing with me, too. I didn't grow up knowing anything about that kind of stuff. I do remember once seeing Shriners in a parade.
Oh, yeah.
Driving around in little funny cars.
Oh, yeah, the Shriners. Yeah. That's definitely their public face. I didn't know they were Masons, though. I knew they were Shriners. I didn't know a Shriner was a Mason. Go ahead.
Hold on one second, Tim.
Oh, yeah.
Hello?
Yeah.
Are you there, Tim? Okay.
Yeah.
So what about you, sir? Let me interview you for a few minutes. What's piqued your interest as of late?
Well, I'm still listening to the Ball Earth skepticism, to be honest with you. Those are the audios I'm listening to. I have the staple audios, like I said, No Agenda, and I occasionally post something out of that. But I'm still listening to the Ball Earth stuff. It's compelling and it's challenging. And one of the Ball Earth skeptic posted a video that actually always made me wonder, and that was taking a picture across Lake Ontario where I live and being able to see the entire skyline of Toronto, which is growing like crazy. And if you believe in the slope, or the curvature of the Earth being, I believe, 8 inches per mile squared, which I think is someone asked me to explain the formula, and I'm not too great at curvature formulas for spheres, alleged spheres, but the formula I think the guy lays out in the video as well. So it's about 8 inches per squared mile. So if you take 30 miles across Lake Ontario, you should get a considerable drop, maybe 600 feet. And that would mean you wouldn't be able to see the bottom of these buildings. And, of course, that's not the case. You can when you zoom in with a zoom lens. And then you get all the stories about refraction and bending of light. I think bending of light is a cover story. I think there's resident genius Einstein came up with it, I think. I'm not agree with all that, but that's still got my interest right now, and that's what I posted about on psychologist.com and talk a bit about that.
Yeah, I'm still, like I've told you before, I'm still undecided about that, but I will say this, that I always take empirical evidence over any other evidence. And when my wife and I used to take walks up to the top of where the Griffith Observatory was when I used to live in L.A. proper, you could look out over L.A. and you could see all the way to the coast on a clear day. You could see all the way to Orange County, right? You could see really far, and it just looks totally flat. So.
Yeah, well, I think part of the great deceptions that we've been looking into for years is that we're told to ignore what our senses sense, and we're told to believe the opposite.
Yeah. Yep. I don't personally know for a fact that we live on a ball or a flat plane. I'm not sure, but. There is definitely empirical evidence to at least question and lean more towards some sort of flat surface, that's for sure.
Well, a lot of people say, isn't it relevant? It's not relevant. Who cares what we live on? But I'm the exact opposite. Well, that's like saying 9/11 is not relevant. Well, I guess if you don't care if you're being fooled or not, then it's not relevant. But I kind of like to know.
Yes. Yeah, I think everybody... who is interested in questioning things definitely likes to know a little bit about something. Just I haven't taken too much of an interest in that particular subject, only because I've got tons of other subjects that I'm looking into. So, but I'm sure eventually I'll get around to that one at some point.
Well, this one is something that everyone should be able to know about. It's pretty damn relevant. Again, I'm trying to get to the bottom of why people are telling me that this is a rabbit hole, this is a distraction, don't look there. I'm very puzzled about that, because it's not obvious to me that this is psyop or a distraction or to get people off looking into the regular media fakery, which I think we pretty much busted wide open. I'm content with my knowledge on media fakery. But this one is a pretty impossible one to resolve in any way. So I'm confident it's going to just keep on bothering me forever, because there's just no way of knowing for sure other than what we're told. But then it leads me to believe, okay, why did they decide to make it a sphere? Why is it a ball, and what is the reason? That's where some of the speculation can get pretty fantastic and interesting. That is, of course, with the ball, that means no point in trying to find the edge of the earth, because you'll just end up back to where you started. But if there is an edge, and what's over the edge? Horizon. That part of the story fascinates me, and that would probably be a great reason to hide it, especially if there's something behind door number 1, 2, or 3 that, as they said, and let's make a deal, is more interesting than what we got here.
Yes. Well, I think one of the things that you and I have discussed in the past, I'll just mention briefly, is that And I brought this up on the call with Jay Dyer in a similar fashion, and that is, no matter whether something is good or bad, like whatever you think is good or whatever you think is bad, and so in this case, replace good or bad with flat earth or round earth.
Yeah.
Whatever it may be, the people who control our perceptions can make it flat or round whenever they want. And that's the really interesting point, at least from my perspective, is you could go through a time period where, and there must be an ultimate reason to this, and I would speculate, just for the time being, that when you're moving through waves of time, that it's part of a revolutionary process to overthrow the old perceptions and the old realities, even if those old realities are false realities that we've been raised. I believe to a certain extent that there is that you were given those false realities for the purpose of overthrowing them later, and then the person the new the old rulers with the new face will be the people that you look to because they overthrew the old thought pattern.
Okay, so we're talking about the dialectics.
That's right. And the dialectical process has built-in flaws to it so that those flaws can be revealed to people in the future so that it overthrows the old thing, but really it's just the same thing over and over again with a new face. And either one, whether it's flat Earth or round Earth, whichever one is the real Earth, whichever one it is, you never end up finding out which one it really is because they'll flip it back to the other one. And then because of the way that people tend, and especially in this time period, tend to look to mass media and mass culture for the verification of how things are supposed to be, then whatever the new thing is, that's what it's going to be no matter what, even if it's right or wrong, good or bad.
All right. Well, I still like to know if there is an edge in what's past it, and I find all the chatter about it from the ecologist's point of view, because these people already have the mindset that there's a problem and they want to fix it and figure it out. I just find it interesting and fascinating. Some might call it whimsical and a waste of time, but I like the speculation. I like figuring it out. Especially since I'm almost sure that there's no right answer. So it could probably go on forever and ever. But I have to admit, it's quite interesting how many Australians are so in tune. And I think their population is the same as Canada. It seems like there's more Australians than Canadians that are really, really in this field. So I find that an interesting side note as well.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we know that the toilet bowl thing's a hoax, so.
well, that's what Rollo did the experiment for me in a video. I don't know if you saw. I asked him to do it, and he didn't use his toilet. He used the sink.
Right.
He spared us the visual of the toilet. And that's
right.
The kind of fun people that are listening and participating, so. I've always enjoyed it. I'm continuing to enjoy it. I have no idea where any of this leads, but I'm just enjoying the ride a lot. And I hope more people start to speak out. We have more new voices on the audio chat, which is great. I enjoy all of them, and I always want to hear even more in the future. So you can come on the Fakeologist conference call as well. If they don't have a computer, there's no excuse. We have the I know everyone has a telephone. Landline or otherwise, so anyone who wants to talk to Todd Adams, I did put a need to meet link. I'm going to put it on schedule.fakeologist.com. So anyone who wants to talk to John, and I'll stay quiet, can probably hook up with John on one of these calls. You don't need to be a member of Fakeologist or any other site. Just log into needtomeet.com and get the link off schedule.fakeologist.com, and I bet you John would probably like to talk to anybody, take questions, answers, pick your brain, that kind of thing. It'd be great.
Absolutely. Count me in. I am pulling into my driveway right now, my friend, so I'm going to
All
bid
right,
you...
All right, good timing.
I'm going to bid you a good weekend.
All right. Excellent. Have a great one. Take care.
All right. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
This is the Gulo. You're listening to Fakeologist Radio on fakeologist.com.